I think that's a really good take home, to be thinking about, I guess, what our teams think when we call them. What are they? What's that response when they see your name come up on their phone? What are they thinking? Is it just, do they want something from me? Or is it that this person is actually genuinely caring? This is a Hillsong Creative Podcast, where we hear from creative experts and influencers, the dreamers and the doers, what they've learned and what we can learn from their journey as we explore, respond and create. Well, it's so good to be back with you on season two of the Hillsong Creative Podcast. We've had a great few weeks and we've received so much positive feedback about season one. So thank you so much for listening and for being a part of season one. In season two, we're introducing a new segment called the Creative Compass, where we explore some of the key values that we have and that we're exploring as a creative team here in Sydney, Australia. And I hope that they really help you as you explore your key values personally and perhaps as your ministry or as your work. So that's the Creative Compass, and that'll be coming up after the interview. So stick around for that. But right now, we're going to jump into the interview, and you'll see it's a little bit different to normal, and hopefully you enjoy it. So let's jump straight in.
Hey, welcome to the Hillsong Creative Podcast. My name is Mush, and today we've got the voice of the Hillsong Creative Podcast. You may have heard him on previous episodes, Rich Langton. Thank you and welcome.
This is pretty fun, hey?
This is very strange.
The shoe's on the other foot.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I'm actually really, really excited about this.
This will be fun.
I get to actually kind of put some questions to you. I get to kind of
just be go easy in. On me.
Yeah. Well, it's good though. It really is good. I'm actually quite intrigued and quite love the fact that I get to have this conversation with you. Anyway, you and Cass lead our team and past our team with your focus being here in Australia.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe what our listeners may not know is that you have your background on the way to this current role has taken you to all sorts of places.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a bit more.
Wow. I mean, as a young adult, when I left high school, I thought I would probably my dream in life was to leave school, start my own business of some sort, probably become an industrial designer, and with the end goal of buying a Porsche. That was like the trajectory that I thought I was heading along. And I left school and went down that path, I guess, started studying that, you know, arts and the like. And God arrested me when I was about 18 and really called me to the ministry. It was very clear that I should be pastoring.
What do you mean? Because it's not, I mean, having the dreams and the hopes and dreams as a young person, that's part of what we encourage.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say God arrested you, what did that look like?
Yeah, I think that at that time, for whatever reason, I guess it's the grace of God for me, but I just started seeking God more and really alongside, I guess, my career trajectory, I was seeking God more personally in my own time and, you know, in the rest of my time. And at that point, I don't know, just was God was very clearly, he was evident in my life.
Right, right.
And I think during that time, the Toronto blessing was happening, which was a pretty, right. For me, I grew up in a Baptist church and that was not something that was going to be part of my world, but that was sort of happening there. John Wimber came to Australia and Cass and I ended up going to a John Wimber conference, which was radically, right. You know, that radically changed my life and Cass's life as well. And as well, my parents, they had gone away, they went on an alpha weekend, learning how to teach the alpha course. And there was a Holy Spirit session at this course. And they went away to this camp and came back just completely different people. They were Christians. I grew up in a real strong Christian family. But they came away with this deeper understanding of who God was. And so that was confronting for me. So when I saw them come back, I was like, They know something of God that I don't know.
Right.
And it freaked me out a bit. But at the same time, I wanted more of God. And so I guess I started seeking more of who he is, right. and the Holy Spirit. Who is the Holy Spirit, and how does he work, and how does he speak? And really dived into the scriptures and tried to find out.
Right.
And I think through the course of that, therefore, my desire for, you know, a Porsche and the things of the world became less, and my desire to know who God was and to serve him became more. And so that then, therefore, sort of translated into eventually going to Bible college and studying and heading in the direction of pastoring.
So that's quite a few experiences in there, and everything kind of, it feels like it was a bit of a one thing led to the other and everything, which is great. Now, my question to you then is, so you had those kind of, in essence, life events, if you want to call them that, that I guess are somewhat milestones, plus everything else that came from that. Now, to this day, when you're sitting here,
yes,
can you see the cumulative effect of everything all the way back to wanting to have the Porsche industrial, all the way to here? Have you seen the cumulative effect of everything? Can you sit here and look back and see an explanation? Not explanation, but I guess the effect of it all?
I certainly can. I think that, you know, I guess that what I've told of the story is the early part.
Yeah.
When Cass and I got married, which was soon after the story that I've just told, I felt that the next step would be to move from Melbourne, where we grew up, to Sydney and become part of Hillsong Church. And I thought that I would be the next sort of shooting star, if you like. Pastor Brian would see me and I'd be on staff straight away and I'd be pastoring and leading and preaching and all of that. In reality, the journey from arriving here to me becoming someone on staff and pastoring in a full-time capacity was a lot of years. And so then I went on this whole journey of running my own businesses and doing some of the things that I thought I would be doing, but just not with the direction or with the intent that I thought I would have. So my intent was to support my family and to earn a living so that I could volunteer at church, so that I could build the kingdom, so that I could be a part of church. But in that was such a journey because at the time, you know, a few years... Here's the real story.
Yeah, go.
I had a few key pastors that I looked to who had planted churches in their 20s or, you know, even 30. That 25-year mark was a milestone for me. I'm like, I need to be in ministry by the time I'm 25. Right. And 25 came and went, and then 30 came and went. And so then years and years passed, and I started to realize that maybe life was going to look different to what I thought.
Yeah.
And maybe even pastoring, maybe even ministry is different to what I thought.
Right.
And so a lot of years I questioned my role in the church, my role on staff or not on staff, my role in the team. And even, I guess, Cass's trajectory, she, when we first arrived here at church, she soon became employed and ran the events department for some years and all of that. So comparatively, where I thought I was heading and where I thought, you know, and where she actually was heading, we were sort of on different, I guess, same direction, but different journeys.
Yeah, right.
And that was easy for me to compare and all of that. And therefore, sorry, to answer question.
Good, I like it, yeah.
It's now that I look back that I see running a small business and having to give good customer service and care for people and all of those sorts of things.
Right.
They're all really useful,
yeah.
And majority of our team are not on staff. Majority of our team have actual jobs that they go to midweek, and I can relate to them. I know some of what that is now because of the experiences that I've had, but I didn't realize that those experiences when I was having them would be so important.
Which is going to be my next question is, like, in those seasons of running the business and everything else that look at on the way to here, how much sense did they make in the season? And how certain were you that in the season, this was where you needed to be and this is where God had you?
Yeah.
How certain were you? And I'm looking back now, I know you can see it, and the trail is there, it's the trajectory leads here, it's all great. But in the season, what does it look like?
I think that I would go in and out of really sort of...
The certainty.
Yeah, the certainty, the levels of faith.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, most of the time I was really questioning, not questioning who God was or whatnot, but just questioning my place in it all and the circumstances that he was taking me through. Now, I guess I've matured a little bit and I can look back and realize that they're real important and I can see the reason for them.
Yeah.
Never did I question who God was or my relationship with him. It was more just trying to understand how life works.
Yeah.
I was even thinking about it just as I was coming here this morning, that the whole idea of being content that Paul talks about in Philippians, having a lot or having not a lot, being where you think you should be or not being where you think you should be, it's really important to realize that God has you and be content in the circumstances that he has you in.
Yeah.
And sort of work through, I guess I'm learning or have learned, well, both have learned and am learning to not be striving to be somewhere else, but be just grateful for the opportunity to be part of the kingdom, really, and for the part I get to play with the people I get to influence, those who are around me.
Right.
And there's always people around you. You know, there's always someone to speak encouragement to or to share the gospel with or the like. So, yeah, life can look however, but God has it.
Okay, so that's interesting because I would imagine people would find themselves in some variation of that in-between season between I know what God's called me to do and I have it in my heart and here I am. Speak to the person who has heard the voice of God and I guess would say, I have a dream, I have something I want to do with my world. I want to commit my efforts to building this kingdom in whatever way, within the church and with or whatever industry they find themselves in.
Mm.
What should they be looking for? What practical, I guess, efforts should they be making in this in-between season that may be hazy, that may be uncertain?
Mm.
Speak to them. I was like, what would you tell that person?
For me, I think probably the idea of faithfulness. That's what comes to mind. That's what I think of straight away is that I would encourage people to be faithful, to just trust God that he has them and be faithful in the circumstances they find themselves. And I guess alongside that, I would encourage people to be self-assessing and sort of learning. Because for myself, I think throughout the years, I don't know if I've done enough sort of due diligence in that area, as in really seeking other people's
input.
Wise counsel and input. Yes.
Yeah, right.
I would try to be so, independent and think that I know myself, think that I know my goals, think that I know my dreams, and therefore that's all that counts.
Yeah, right.
And reality is sometimes we don't know ourselves or we have blind spots and we can't see what other people can see. You know, for example, I thought I was the person that Pastor Brian would just see, and I had all the right skill set. And in reality, I'm probably not as gifted towards some of the things I thought I was gifted to, and I'm much more gifted to perhaps pastoring people one-on-one in smaller groups or off the platform even. And I can do those things really well, but they're not necessarily the things that I valued as a younger person.
Right.
So there's that whole thing of just working through who are you really and what are you gifted to do actually, and are we comfortable with that?
Yeah.
There's things you can always grow, you can always learn new skills, all of that, but there's certain things or certain characteristics about you that I think we have to be comfortable with and embrace. Even.
Exactly right.
I think the idea of calling is also important. Right. And I went back to the scriptures and looked at calling, the idea of calling, because I think oftentimes we associate our calling with our vocation, with our job.
Right.
And the reality is I think the scriptures on the whole, maybe only in one occasion it talks differently than what I'm about to say, but on the whole, for example, Jesus does the calling. Jesus calls his disciples and they follow. And so it's that aspect of call and response. So calling is somebody's doing a calling and somebody's doing a responding. Jesus calls us and we respond. And I think that's more to do with the gospel, receiving the gospel, outworking the gospel, more about living the gospel than it is about how we do that or where we do that. So for lots of people, their calling is to live out the gospel in a workplace somewhere that's, you know, a secular workplace. So the aspect of calling there is the same as the person who's on staff outworking the calling, the gospel, on staff at a church. So independent of where we find ourselves, we can all be faithful to the call of Jesus to outwork the gospel. So if I meet a non-Christian, I can share the gospel just like the person who's an architect or a graphic designer or a painter, you know, they might also be able to paint the gospel,
yeah, right.
Or you know, whatever. But sometimes we think, oh, my calling is to do a certain thing. So I could have said back in the day, my calling is to be an industrial designer. But I think that sort of cuts short what real calling is.
The depth of what actually calling is, uh-huh. Right. Interesting.
If we can take it to another level of depth, and see our calling as living for Jesus, outworking the gospel wherever we find ourselves, then it takes the pressure off trying to find the one thing that we're meant to do with our lives. Because I think the one thing we're meant to do with our lives is serve Jesus, make him known.
Right.
That's my revelation.
Now, that's very interesting.
And I think that's what the gospel says.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I think that now looking back on my journey, I'm grateful because I feel like I can relate to a lot of different people and a lot of different places that they find themselves.
Okay.
So I've studied at Bible college, I've studied at university, I've studied at like a TAFE course. I've worked in business, I've been employed, I've been self-employed, all of that. So, and I've experienced the gamut of even highs and lows of life.
Yeah.
So from an experience perspective, I feel like I've done, you know, that helped me to relate to people. But the reality is, I think that we're all on the same journey as far as day by day growing in our relationship with Christ.
Right.
And I think that that's something that you don't graduate from.
Right.
And so my perspective is we do that alongside the people in our team, both our staff team and our volunteer team. And my encouragement to them and I, you know, alongside Cass, our encouragement is first and foremost to be encouraging our volunteers to be loving Jesus and putting him first and to be seeking him with all their heart and to be stepping out more and more in doing that. And then after that, we can talk about, you know, their contribution to the team or their, you know, how they outwork.
The activities of team.
Yeah.
So then, okay, you strike me, in the years I've known you, you strike me as somebody who's incredibly perceptive. Now, there may be a gift, there may be something you've developed, or maybe a combination of both. In light of that, let's talk about culture. First of all, what does healthy culture look like? And what are the things you're looking at to give you, in a sense, to give you a pulse on where the culture is at? Because you lead a team that is across the country and you live in Sydney, but somehow you're still responsible for the pulse and the health and the culture of our team.
Mm.
How? What does it look like? What are you looking for? What are the things that you're taking note of?
I think that you have to be mindful of the conversations you're having, and the conversations happen from relationship. People will tell you all sorts of things. They'll tell you where they really are at if they're in true relationship with you. And I look around and I see a lot of leaders leading, but they lead from a place of being out front and not looking back to who's following. And you know, there's that funny thing where if you're a leader and you turn around and no one's following, then you're not a leader.
Yeah, fair enough.
but as leaders, I think we do need to turn around and look at the people who are following and actually see how they're following and be in relationship with them as they follow.
Yeah.
And so I guess my heart is to not just be the person out front doing that, but to be with our team, with our people, and be in true relationship. So I want our people to know I love them and I'll do anything for them. And I wouldn't just expect them to do something I'm not prepared to do myself. And in that, I think there can be an authentic, you know, not an authentic, but authentic conversation can happen. And the reality of where people are at can come out.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you can get the tone of the culture because you can hear the tone of the conversation.
Yes.
And so people are either negative or positive. They're either like on top and rising or they're under the weight of everything that they're carrying. And you can tell that through the conversation.
Okay. So example, I've taken the pulse of the team. We're not doing well. We're not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
We need resuscitation, so to speak. The pulse, like it's not healthy. Yeah. Where do you start?
I think probably a couple of places I would start would be with my key leaders, making sure that they are okay and that they're not the problem.
Yeah, fair.
Well, probably reality, thinking back a step, I would probably look at myself, make sure that I'm okay.
Right.
There's been a couple of times, even recently, where I've realized that my tone in my language has been a bit, not necessarily negative, but just not positive and not uplifting and forward forward thinking, and I've realized that has an effect. So I'd start with myself, and then I'd look at my key leaders and look at how they're approaching life, whether they're okay, because people don't want to not be doing well. They don't want to be negative. They don't want to be pulling down the team. They want to be doing well.
Yeah.
So I think we have to look at what's behind. You know, if someone's not doing okay or they're being negative, there's going to be a reason for that. And alongside of that, we have team nights every week, and we have prayer meetings before every service. And I would address those bigger picture things and those culture kind of things at team night and at prayer meetings. And I would just be quite upfront about the things we want to tackle, and not in a negative, not saying, oh, we're not this, but be saying we are this, whatever the issues are.
Yeah.
So we are moving forward. We are positive. We are serving Pastor Brian and Bobby. We are, part of the solution, not part of the problem, etc.
So, okay, then talk to us about the difficult conversation. So you've taken, you've done a bit of a stock take. You've identified maybe 1, 2, 3 areas you want to address.
Mush, you're asking me hard questions.
I know. I'm taking notes here for myself too. But seriously though, because you've done this stock take, you've realized 1, 2, 3, 4 areas that maybe you want to address, and some of them involve addressing maybe someone directly.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about what that looks like, because like you said, these are people who are on your team, and you've already declared the fact that you value them.
Yeah.
But then you have to go back and have a difficult conversation.
Yes. Yeah.
Now what?
I feel like in our team, I'm the guy that often has to have the difficult conversation.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, I'll still say that you do it so graciously. but I want to know, that's why I'm asking, because it's not you, even though you do it well, you don't have the reputation of the guy with the stick walking around waiting.
Right.
What does that look like, and how do you achieve that?
I hope that, like I said before, I hope that our people, volunteers and staff, everybody, I hope they know that I value them and I do love them, and that's genuine. It's not just language or not just rhetoric. It's real. And so from the get-go, I hope that before the problem arises, I'm inputting enough and showing that enough that when the problem arises, they know that whoever it is, if there's a difficult conversation, they know that I'm going to approach it. I'm not doing it because I don't like them. It's because I love them and I want the best for them and for the team. So when we have those conversations, I guess that would be my approach. And then within that, my approach would never be with a stick or with trying to wield some sort of power or anything like that. It's more, my genuine approach is that I want the best for the person. So if there's something that they can't see, like a blind spot or some sort of activity that they're engaged in that really isn't becoming to, someone who's portraying to be a Christian and portraying to be a leader in our team, if they have that, then I would just want to highlight that to them and raise that conversation with them. There's been occasions where I guess the way I've approached it is to ask the person about a situation to say, hey, it's come to my attention that certain situation has happened. Is that the case? And they say yes or no. Sometimes they lie, sometimes they tell the truth,
but
generally they would tell the truth. And and then I'd ask them about how do they see that situation? And I guess try to go on the journey with the person in that.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means many, many meetings with them, not just the one. And I know that if I'm going to start the conversation, I'm going to have to finish it.
Committing to a journey here, right? Right, right.
But that's part of it.
Yeah, it is.
It's so easy as leaders of particularly worship teams, to just take someone off the team or stop rostering them. And that almost defeats the purpose of being team and of being church, because people begin to know that the congregation is loved, but as soon as you become, you get on the team, if you do something wrong or if you step out of line, then you get kicked out and therefore you're not loved. And that's sort of counterintuitive. I think the more you're involved, the more we need to embrace and love, and the more we need to commit and go on the journey. And having said that, we're not always perfect and I don't always do it well, but the intent is there.
Yeah, right.
Today's episode is brought to you by our Hillsong Worship and Creative Conference. And we are so excited about the conference, which is happening again in November this year. And at the moment, there's a special price for you, which ends on May 27th. So check it out at hillsong.com/WCC. I'm Rich Langton, and this is my Fantastic Four. The last book I read, or am reading, is Developing the Leaders Around You by John Maxwell. And it's one that I've read before, many years ago, but it's one that I'm just needing to come back to again, I think. I think my favourite way to recharge is to be at home with probably just with the family or even just alone. Sometimes I say to Cass that my love language is time by myself. So probably it'd be just a little bit of time at the farm by myself. One person I'd like to have coffee with would be Eugene Peterson. If I didn't have to sleep, I would probably end up wasting the time. I'd probably watch Netflix or something like that. But a good answer would be, you know, obviously learn something or read the Bible or pray.
Okay, so we've spoken about culture and what it should look like. If it doesn't look like what it wanted to, then what you do and, yeah. And all the rest of it. So now you've got a team that's, you know, functioning. They've got responsibilities and everything.
Sorry. We should talk about one other thing too there.
Go. Yes.
I shouldn't interrupt you.
No, definitely.
When you started talking about culture again and highlighting that, I thought it's good to talk about the fact that we as a creative team, we're following the culture of our senior leadership and of the sort of culture that they are wanting to create.
Right.
And so as a team, we're not trying to create our own culture or our own little subgroup.
Yeah.
We're just trying to outwork what Pastor Brian and Bobby and in Australia, Joel and Jules are after and really looking for.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's a real, I think for a lot of churches, that's a deal. Because sometimes as creative leaders and worship leaders, we don't necessarily, you know, we have our own vision maybe, and we want to outwork that rather than submitting to the leadership, the leadership's culture.
Yeah.
And it's important, I think, to be in line with, obviously, with your leadership's culture and doing, outworking what they have in mind rather than what we have in mind.
Okay, then if we're saying that, because that speaks to unity, if I'm hearing it, you know, in some ways it speaks to unity.
Yep.
Then in terms of aligning whatever efforts we do as a creative team to that, how much does unity account for, you know, for the things that we value in for culture? What is where's unity's, I guess, role within the culture of a healthy team?
Yeah, I think it's 100% central.
Right.
And it doesn't come easy. Because there's always little things that someone won't agree with.
Sure.
You know, there's with the direction that leadership want, or within our team, there'll be things that I say or the cast says, or, you know, the direction we want to head in. And in that, there's only a certain amount of places for people, if that makes sense.
Right.
So if we go in a certain direction, let's say it's a particular item for Mother's Day. Yeah. If we choose a song and dance item, then that's excluding certain people for that particular item. And that can create disunity if you allow it, or if the people allow it. Or it can be the most uniting thing ever, because all of a sudden, by choosing that direction for that particular item, people who wouldn't normally have an opportunity get an opportunity, and those who aren't particularly involved get to celebrate those people in that instance. And as you say, celebration, I think, and celebration is important, and being sort of happy for other people's opportunity is super important.
Yeah.
And that, I think all of that then creates unity.
Yeah.
But you have to fight for it as well. You have to really...
There's no passive approach to it, is there?
No. And you have to choose unity. You have to choose to submit to the vision of leadership, and choose to for the bigger picture. Sometimes to not get to play your part. Sometimes to be second fiddle, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's where the rubber hits the road. That's the hard part.
Yes, it is.
But I think even going back to our conversation about my journey.
Yeah.
I've realized that Cass's role and mine are quite different based on our personalities, based on our gifting and our skill set. And that's a good thing. That actually is, it could drive us apart because we're so different in lots of ways. But thankfully, God's allowing it to use, allowing it to bring us together. And the differences in personality and style and gifting is actually enhancing what we're able to do because it's creating, or because of the unity in that.
Exactly right.
And because of what we can now bring. Yes. Instead of just bringing one flavor, we can bring the two flavors.
So. Okay. That leads me to my next, I guess, question for you is then, the other thing I know about you is I know you are very good at formulating processes and structures and things that help us actually function well and actually be able to channel the creativity we have within our team into productive outcomes.
Right.
Talk to me about then what it looks like to, in a team that's this diverse with so many offerings of creativity available, you know, from so many people. How do you take that, channel that in a way that actually is productive and keeps us pointed, like you were saying before, to the vision, to a greater vision?
I think to step back a little bit, we've gone on this journey from being a worship team to being a creative team in a real way. We've been called a creative team for some years, but in reality, that was just music, or that was the worship team, the platform team. But nowadays, we've got singers and dancers and actors and painters and all, the list goes on, photographers and writers and yada yada. And in doing that, the reason we've gone that way is because there's so many gifts that people have that could contribute if there were a place. And so Cass's heart, I think, really is to include as many people as possible.
Yeah.
And I love that. I'm on board with that too. But in having that heart, you actually have to create space for people or place for people to contribute and create ways for them to contribute. So it's sort of this building blocks of we have a heart for people, that we want them to be involved, therefore we get more people around, therefore we've got to make more opportunities for them to be involved. Yeah. And one thing leads to another, and therefore you have to have systems and processes to make sure that people are involved. So in that, I guess I shy away a little bit because I could be known as the systems guy.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not about systems. I'm more about, I guess, making things functional and helping people to actually be able to contribute.
Yeah, right.
Because I see the systems as helping to pastorally care for our people.
Right.
A great example of that is when we roster people. If we don't have a great rostering system that actually sort of does it fairly and does it well, then you either roster people too much or not enough, and then they're either hurt that they're not being used, or they're overused and they're burnt out and they're hurt that way. So you've got to have a good system for that. And and if you do, the system becomes invisible and it just helps people. So in that, I think across the board, I've noticed that over and over, I just can see areas where we can improve the way we do things in order to get a better outcome, which is really a better outcome for the people and or for communicating the gospel.
So then how then do you, when determining processes and structures and the systems and all that kind of stuff, how do you make sure that the systems aren't just serving the people who are systems minded and they actually are serving to, like you said, to help the people who do have these creative gifts they're bringing to our team?
Yeah.
Because I know we can, as 2, 3, or 4 systems-minded people, we can sit and talk about systems all day and achieve everything that we think we need to achieve because it ticks our boxes.
Yeah.
But then take that outcome and place it into a real creative team.
Mm.
It may not give us the result we want, even though the 4 people who are systems-minded were all about it.
Yes, yeah.
So where is the balance, and how do we make sure this actually works with the team?
I think I've learned and am learning to not even talk about the systems. So we, as you know, Mosh, we don't use the word system anymore.
Yes, we don't.
We use the word flow. because I think in that, it just, the language is really important because it trips people up.
Yeah.
If you say we need to have a system and a process, then for some people, particularly in the creative arena, that is like, you know.
It's like handcuffs.
Yeah, they're just thinking, well, we can't be creative anymore because you've systematized me and you've boxed me in.
Yeah, right.
And in reality, I guess what I'm talking about or thinking through is just the stepping stones, if you like, to getting to where we need to be.
Yeah.
So for us, we have so much going on all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that what we sometimes inadvertently do is we don't leave enough time to be creative.
Yeah.
And so the practicalities sort of stifle the creativity, as in everything's last minute. So you choose the idea that you have in the minute rather than having, if you've got a better process for example, project management and planning, then you can, you know that you can have 3 months to come up with one idea if you're 3 months in advance, if that makes sense, or if you're early enough thinking about the idea.
Yeah.
Whereas if you leave the thinking of the idea till the last minute, then the practicalities of having to outwork the idea stifle the creativity.
Right.
So it's really just about, in my thinking at least, it's about valuing the creativity, valuing the idea, valuing that side of it enough that we make time for it, and the people who are process orientated serving the people who are less process oriented, and instead of wanting to be in the forefront and hey, look at my process, look at my planning, just coming alongside and helping to navigate the timelines and the processes, if you want to put it that way, with the people that need to be more creative.
Yeah. Okay. As we look to finish up and kind of, I want to know what you've mentioned the complementary nature of you and Cass and how you lead together. Talk to us about that. Talk to us about how, you know, how you guys work together, what it looks like. Talk to us about home. Talk to us about what that looks like.
In reality, so when we, I'll be brief, but when we first got married, I was going to be the pastor. And I said to Cass, you need to be the pastor's wife. And she was at that time working in business.
Right.
And so she said to me, I'm not going to be doing anything unless God speaks to me about it and is quite clear. So that was interesting, bit of a deal. But sort of 20-something years on, we work alongside each other. And I am a pastor and she is my pastor's wife, but she's also a pastor in her own right.
Right.
And I guess I look at that the verses in Ephesians that talk about me serving my wife and her loving me and you know, submitting to me or, you know, however whichever translation you want to take there. But the complementary nature of marriage there, where there's a husband who will do anything, lay his life down for his wife, and a wife who will pretty much do the same for her husband.
Right.
And I think we're getting to a place where that's more of a reality.
Right.
Whereas I think early on I was wanting to have my own, you know, I was wanting to be the head of the household and then be their man and the leader. And while all those things can be good, I do want to lead my home and love my family and all of that. I do also realize that my role in our relationship is to lay my life down for my wife. Yeah, wow. And it's taken me a long time to I guess grapple with that side of marriage and of life and the reality of what that looks like.
Yeah.
You know, for us that means that sometimes Cass is traveling and I'm at home.
Yeah.
I would never have imagined that for my life.
Right.
Now, in a good headspace and a good understanding, I think I love it and I'm blessed to be able to spend that time alone, you know, looking after my kids while my wife is away.
Yeah.
But in the wrong headspace and the wrong time, those things can really trip you up and they can be divisive. But for us, fortunately, by the grace of God, we've battled through learning how to make that work. Yeah. And I think for me, I should speak for myself, learning to humble myself and submit myself to the will of God and to giving myself more to Him means submitting my life, laying down my life for whatever serves her best. And that outworks itself at home and it outworks itself at work and at church as well. That's not always easy, but there's a blessing in it, you know, always when you read the scriptures and you see the way it says to do something and then you follow that way, there's blessing in that. There's, you know, there's a good that comes out of that. So I'm blessed to be able to live that and see that. And, you know, Cass is awesome. She makes it easy, but I'm blessed to be able to live that.
Rich, thank you. I get to work alongside you, you know, but for me to sit here across, you know, the microphones from you and have this conversation has been very, very enlightening. Thank you for taking the time to do this.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. Look forward to doing this again.
Hey, well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with myself and with Mush. He's a great interviewer. I really enjoyed sitting with him and I guess, being interrogated with the hard questions, but real questions around real issues. And the answers that I gave, I guess they're from the heart. And you as a listener, I hope that you connected with some of the things I said and they were really helpful. And I'd love to hear from you and, you know, interact with you on some of that stuff. So if you want to ask questions or interact with me about any of the things I said or about the podcast in general, you can do that by going to our Worship and Creative Conference Instagram, which is at WCC. Or you can, of course, write to me at Rich Langton on my Instagram. Love to hear from you and interact with you about those things and about the podcast, perhaps even about things you'd like to hear on the podcast. We've got a great season lined up, but we want to serve you well. So if you'd like to let us know what you'd like to hear or the topics you'd like us to cover, let us know. Can't wait to hear from you. Well, next up, we have the Creative Compass, which I mentioned earlier, but let me explain what that is. For us, of late, we've been discussing some of the core values in our creative team. Obviously, as a team, we follow our church's vision statement. We only have one vision, but within that, we have some core values that make us the creative team. And what we realized was that we have some of these values that we say are important, but the outworking of them has slipped a little bit. And in some instances, some of the things we say we value, we don't value anymore, and we perhaps shouldn't. But there's new things that we should value. So we've been discussing what our core values are and really trying to work out what direction we should be heading in. We haven't arrived in some of these areas as yet, but we need a direction. It's more of a compass than a rule book or a set of guidelines. It's a compass with compass points that we want to be heading in. You'll notice as we are discussing these values that we're talking a lot about our creative team, our worship and creative team here in Sydney, Australia. But for you, it might be that you work individually or you work in a creative team that's not in a church environment. And that's great. That's fine. You can still apply these things to you because the reality is we live our values no matter what. And so we're better to be intentional about the things that we value rather than allowing our values to be dictated by the circumstances we find ourselves in. So as you listen, I would encourage you to think through whether you value similar sorts of things or to re-establish your own core values and work out how you can live them in your environment or your ministry. So now let's jump into the Creative Compass. This first one is a discussion with Mush, who interviewed me earlier on this episode. It's myself and Annie Garrett, who's one of our great worship leaders and senior leaders in our creative team. So one of the things that obviously we would want to be about as a creative team is Christ.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Yeah.
But sometimes the things that go without saying, therefore go without saying. And so obviously Christ would want to be central to a creative team in a church team. But how do we go about keeping Jesus central to it? Mush, for you in the production area, how do you go about keeping Jesus central?
I think keeping an eye on, I guess, the conversations that happen, not necessarily because you want to gauge where people are at, but I think sometimes the absence or the presence of some conversations is a good barometer.
What's an example of that? Where would you see that happening?
Well, I mean, like, for example, like literally conversations about faith and conversations about my walk with God and about worship and the things that are actually fundamental to our walk. Mm. If those conversations over time get more and more difficult to have because they've crowded with the activity of doing church, that in itself is a barometer.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't tell you the full story,
yeah,
but you can at least,
right,
as a leader, you kind of you see trends and you go, okay, maybe it's worth calibrating back to a bit of a true north.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that it's so easy to get caught up in just getting, for example, Sundays done or getting the task at hand done.
Yeah.
And then you forget that people have real lives outside of whatever the task is that we're doing with them.
Correct.
And if we're not intentional about perhaps asking them about their walk with Jesus or or like you say, if those conversations aren't happening, then I guess it can be so easy for any of us to be just doing a task and become sort of a religious obligation almost. Yeah. So then, Annie, with you, I guess you would be pastorally involved with people.
Mm-hmm.
How do you have those conversations without seeming like you're asking the obvious? How do you ask someone how their walk with Jesus is going?
I probably don't. I mean, there's nothing wrong with phrasing it that way, mm-hmm. but I usually more start with like, how are you going? What's been challenging lately or what's going great? And just let it be a kind of natural conversation. And I think in that, I think if someone asks, there's nothing wrong with saying that, but if someone were to say, how are you going with Jesus? I might feel like I need to give a report on how I'm going
and
with him.
Almost, you know, the answer you meant to
give. Yeah, exactly. Even though that's a normal question to
ask. Exactly right. But I think even sometimes the environment you cultivate, because for example, if you're going to try and have that conversation during soundcheck or rehearsal on a Sunday,
right.
there's a very different level of response you would get. Like if you haven't actually deliberately crafted out an environment that actually allows for that conversation to happen. Mm-hmm. So whilst there's nothing wrong in asking it during rehearsal and soundcheck if it's there, I think maybe a step further is that for the leader on the team, if you're constantly looking for environments that allow for that conversation, because that's the kind of conversation you want to have the time to be able to respond to and actually ask the second and third question. Mm-hmm. Chances are it's probably not going to happen on a Sunday when there's services to pull off and there's rehearsals and there's and everything else. So,
yeah.
But I think the more that we like, it's just on our lips and it's just like our conversation and why we're doing what we're doing. And like, you know, we do services every single weekend.
Yeah.
And so I think always talking about why we're doing it and like, that's why we always gather and pray. And I just think putting that before people. And if just talking about our relationship with Jesus is normal, then it just becomes normal to everyone else.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
And then there's the responsibility of it as well. I guess for me, I feel like part of our role as pastors of the team is to pastor the team in their relationship with Christ and not just in their gifting or in their use of their outworking of their gifting on a Sunday. So things like team nights, and you mentioned like gathering prayer meetings and the like become those key points where we can, I guess, exemplify what it is to relate to Jesus, but also then be talking about it and encouraging people in their walk with Christ. People, I guess our team, they want to love Jesus and they want to be in relationship with him. Sometimes they don't know what that looks like or how to do that though. And I think that's an interesting thing. Like you said, Mush, if we don't create opportunity for those conversations with people one-on-one or when it's not about getting something else done, then they don't happen. And then people can feel like they've got to live up to a certain expectation or maybe they don't know how to have a quiet time or read the Bible or pray themselves. And yet, unless we're intentional about creating those opportunities for the conversation around how to do it.
Exactly.
Then they just put on an act and all of us can do that.
Yeah.
So then how do we do that? How do you have enough relationship with people to be able to have real conversations?
I think you start with common ground. In other words, like if I was to have a conversation with one of my team who is maybe a dad or a husband, I guess the conversation about family and kids and everything else is probably a really common, is a good starting point to actually get an inroad into where somebody's at. Mm. You know, because it could be as simple as, hey, how the kids are doing? Oh, one of them's a bit sick, but we're doing okay. Hey, or somebody started school this year, right? And how they're doing at school this year.
Right.
Like those initial conversations or those first questions that actually just open the door to somebody's world. Because if somebody then responds and says a child is sick, for example, unwell, the second and third question after that is then what kind of, in a sense, opens the door further to those actual real conversations. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you can, that could go in a thousand different directions from that point. But I think those questions that actually just ask or give you a reference point of the life behind the service that we see here, that's the door opener, so to speak. And I think that's kind of maybe as leaders what we need to get good at, you know, finding.
Yeah, so. Very good. All right, so real quick, what's one thing that people listening or for our team, what's one thing like this week that we could do to help disciple our creative teams?
I just think noticing is huge. So even from what Mush just said, like that can be a doorway to a conversation and it's a great opportunity. But then a week later, checking in going, how are your kids? How's this week? Mm. I actually think you just keep building on that initial foundation and that's how a relationship just grows. And then suddenly that person goes, oh, you notice when I'm there or not there. Oh, you remember my family. Oh, and it's amazing how just noticing. And so I think for me, remembering and noticing who's been around, who's not been around, what's been happening in people's worlds creates a lot of relationship to then speak into different situations, which can be discipling and all of that.
Yeah. And you, Mush?
Literally just monitor how much your team is hearing from you regarding outside of you expecting something back from them? In other words, the correspondence you have with your team, if you tallied that up between, you know, service in terms of rosters, rehearsals, call times, like run sheets, whatever,
yeah.
and how much is actually just conversation about the rest of life, generally you'll find a fairly severe imbalance.
Yeah.
So as a leader, if you can monitor how much of your correspondence, how much of your phone calls, text messages, emails, and everything else is weighted towards the service that somebody gives back to the team, as opposed to how much of that conversation is weighted towards who they are, the person, where the family is at, where their marriage is at, where they are as a person, like any, that will give you a pretty good barometer of, you know, like if somebody looks at their phone when you call them, what are they thinking?
Yes.
Put yourself in their shoes. Yeah, when they see your number come up on your phone, are they expecting a conversation about rehearsals and rosters and whatever else? Or is it 50-50?
Yeah.
It could be about that, or it could be about just checking in with my kid who was sick last week and you want to find, like, that is a pretty good indication to kind of see where things are at.
I think that's a really good take home to be thinking about, I guess, what our teams think when we call them. What are they, what's that response when they see your name come up on their phone? What are they thinking? Is it just, do they want something from me, or is it that this person is actually genuinely caring? Because I guess my response to that same question would be care. Do we care? Which is really what you're saying too, Annie, but does my team care? And I think that's the take home that I would want to take, is when it comes to my my relationship with Jesus, does my oversight care? Do they want me to grow in my relationship with Christ, or do they just want something from me? So as we go this week, I guess that's what we'll be thinking about.
It's worth taking away.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. Well, that's it for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that on iTunes, YouTube, or SoundCloud, and I'd encourage you to do that so you can be a part of the journey with us. We'd love to hear from you too, so if you want to give us your comments, do that on our Instagram. It's @HillsongWCC, and we'll see you next time.